Hi, this is Heartstock Radio. I'm Carol Murphy, your host. Thanks for tuning in. I'm really happy that everybody's here today again. And we've got a great program ahead. This will be yet another of our Women in Business interviews. Today we have Lindsay Tavis with us. In just a moment, she's going to come back and tell us all about being the lady engineer. Hang with us. We'll be right back.
New York Island, from the redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land.
Hi, this is Heartstock Radio. I'm Carol Murphy. And today on Heartstock, we have Lindsay Tavis with us. She's really known as the Lady Engineer. There's so much behind that title. Lindsay, hi. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. Oh, I'm so glad to be here.
So, Lindsay, please tell our listeners who you are and what you do.
Great. Awesome. So, Carol and the listeners, I designed my first user interface in 2002 while studying engineering at University of Virginia. Back then, my first UI was a touchscreen interface for treadmills. Those did not exist back then.
So I hate to interrupt you, but I know there's a lot of folks out there that really don't know exactly
Yep. Okay, yeah. So a user interface is any screen that you look at on your phone, your tablet, your computer, the layout of the buttons on the screen, what the text says. So however you do, even just dialing your phone, that's a user interface.
And all of this is controlled by programming, software programming.
Exactly. So all of this is developed by software developers, but a user interface designer, which is, you know, part of what I have done for a living, is kind of like an architect, and the construction workers are the software developers. So the architect, if you are designing a house, can design your house, put the bathroom in the right place, design the kitchen the way you want to experience it, and then the construction workers come in and build it. The same is true for building software. You have someone like myself come in and draw pictures of what the interface or the app or the website needs to look like, what it needs to say, what a customer, consumer needs to be able to do on that website. And then the software developers build it.
Fantastic. So can you tell us a little about your journey that's led you to where you are today and what you're doing now, what you're up to?
Yeah. So I'll go back to where I left off on the story. I designed my first user interface in 2002, and I was immediately struck by this idea that we could design technology for people. The combination of understanding people, cognitive science, sociology, and then designing technology to support people. I took that passion and moved to Silicon Valley with a twinkle in my eye. I had big dreams. I wanted to put my name on buildings and be a successful startup entrepreneur. I started by extending my education at UC Berkeley in the School of Information. It was a master's degree that continued my education at the intersection of technology and the social sciences. Dove deeper into user interface design and development, and got to study like how communities form online and how people figure out the quality of information. Now, this was back in 2005 to 2007, and things were, the opportunity in the Valley was palpable. You know, I went to a meetup where Mark Zuckerberg sat on the panel and there were 40 people in the room and I could go up and say hi afterwards. Or I visited Google, like right when their Mountain View campus opened and the blue paint on the G was barely dry. So it was a really, really exciting time. I built my career on what's called customer and user experience design. I was always like the only female on product development teams, working with the technology developers, interfacing with clients and translating what they wanted to the software developers that were building the technology. And, you know, on the side, I was doing everything by the Silicon Valley blueprint. I was writing company ideas on the back of napkins and entering pitch competitions and hacking on the weekends with friends, trying to find a tech co-founder. I had projects written up in TechCrunch and San Francisco Chronicle. So I really, you know, was pursuing my entrepreneurial dreams and very much learning a lot about how to build a successful startup. Eventually, around 2012, I moved back to the East Coast. I grew up in Philadelphia, but I moved to New York City and started continuing to do design for startups, one of my most integral experiences. I worked for a year and a half on a company called Gust. They're an online platform that angel investment groups use to evaluate startups applying for funding. It was there that I really learned the process of building a startup, not just the building the technology, but also how a business goes about getting fundraising. And I kind of tapped into a renewed excitement to build my own business. And in 2014, I set out on my own, started my private practice that I'm still very much running. I realized this evening that this is the longest job I've held down. So 4 years as an entrepreneur. What I do now is I am a startup coach and business design consultant. I take that user-centered design process, the idea of designing technology for people, and I use it actually on all parts of business, marketing, customer research, prototyping, product development, and fundraising. I tapped back into my original passion for designing technology for people, and my mission under the Lady Engineer is to increase the success rate of people-minded and compassionate entrepreneurs, so social impact tech startups. This is really, really important to me because I feel at this moment in time, it's imperative that we decide we are going to design ourselves into the future.
So tell us a little bit about your current clients. Are they makers? And can you give us examples of some things that you've done that have had some really positive impact?
Great. Yeah. So like I said, my focus is on social impact startups, the people that really care about the human on the other side, the customer that they're serving. These are startups that are solving a real problem, a significant problem. In my portfolio right now is one company called Ends and Stems. They are a meal planning service that focuses on developing meal plans and grocery lists where all the recipes use up all the food that you buy. Food waste is a huge contributor to our environment right now, and we waste about 40% of food. That's the equivalent of leaving one shopping bag of three in the parking lot of the grocery store. So she makes it easy for busy households to buy groceries and plan meals while also saving the environment by reducing their food waste.
I was just thinking it's got to be better for a family's budget as well. So that's a major impact.
Yes.
If you're spending $200.
And so what we did together, we did a bunch of things together, but part of our work over 3 months together was her running some private beta trials to test out her meal plans and get some early feedback. And some of the early feedback that was exciting, but also surprised, was that the weekly grocery bill was going down.
Yeah.
And so that was very cool. So that's ends and stems.
So I really wanted to delve into your experiences as a woman in tech, mm-hmm. because we hear so many negative or gappy kind of statistics that just basically say women are either having bad experiences in tech, or they're just not there or not going into tech. So let's start out by talking about your lengthy experiences and what you have found. I mean, is this just rhetoric, or is this real life stuff that we're talking about?
Oh, it's real. If you asked me in 2002 when I decided to study engineering, if being a woman in tech would still be a differentiator in 2017, I definitely would not have believed you. In my engineering program alone, out of 120 students, I would say there were at least 30 to 40 women. I was in a sorority class of 30 girls, and two of my sorority sisters were in my engineering program with me. So while there weren't as many women, I didn't see it as a huge problem when I was a student. And I still don't see it as a pipeline problem.
So the problem is
more of a work culture problem.
Okay. So in other words, you're saying, I mean, just make sure I understand you correctly, that it's not that women aren't studying the things that they need to study in order to have a career in tech. The problem is something other than that.
Yeah. So I actually did research with a public health STEM professor at University of Pennsylvania to help her put together a presentation. And we found that the top five reasons women stop working in STEM is one, that they have to prove their competency more, and they're often passed up for harder projects. When women have children and start to build families, they're questioned why they're working so hard and are suggested to go home and spend time with their family. There is also pressure to play stereotypically feminine roles, like being a secretary or an office mom. I can tell you that I feel like at times I've been a quote unquote therapist to my male coworkers. Women also feel like they're competing with other women for that, single spot. And that's happening less and less, but for sure, there's competition amongst women. And often, surprisingly, they're mistaken for administrative or custodial staff. So thinking that they're a secretary or an office cleaner or some other role besides being a scientist or technologist or engineer or mathematician.
So I want to delve into this a little bit more.
Yeah.
And going to take a quick little break here, and we will be right back with Lindsay.
Me as I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me
that with Lindsay Davis. Lindsay, we were just talking about issues that women face, specifically in the tech field. And one of the things that I'd like to talk about will kind of segue into that, but I first wanted to maybe see if you have some specific examples of how you've been seen differently as a woman in tech.
Sure, sure. So first, I want to say that I've luckily have not been at the receiving end of sexual harassment or advances, but I have definitely been at that receiving end of people not thinking that I'm an engineer or technically competent and experienced in the area. I had a friend introduce me to a potential client in 2011, and I was in New York and I went to visit with this client to see if maybe we could work together. And when he met me, he looked at me and said, "Oh, you should talk to your friend about how he introduced you, because I thought you were going to be a man." And I'm not very good at replying in the moment, and I probably awkwardly laughed and shook it off because I wanted to make a good impression. He said a few things throughout the meeting where I thought maybe there was an issue he had with women, or there was something that he wasn't quite getting. But having worked with engineers my entire career, I totally give them a lot of leeway for being socially awkward. So I got home and I was talking to my dad, and he said, "Lindsay, that guy should not have said that. That wasn't good. And I started to think about it. I thought, okay. So I emailed a bunch of male friends of mine about the situation, and some got back making excuses for him. Like, come on, he's a software developer, they don't know what they're talking about, or they say the wrong thing. And other guys were like, "Lindsay, here's this graph that shows that Lindsay has been predominantly a female name since the 1970s.
That's great.
And so I got a mixed bag of feedback, and I woke up the next morning and I thought, I got to email this guy and tell him I don't want to work with him before he emails me and tells me he doesn't want to work with me because I'm a woman. Mm-hmm. So I was, you know, I think I was 26 at the time. I was very like, I got to make an impression. So I emailed him early on a Saturday morning and said, "You know, you said a few things about my gender. I don't think we'd work well together. Like, thanks for the opportunity." I really didn't expect a response back, but he responded and he said, "Oh, Lindsay, I'm so sorry. That is not what I meant. What I meant to say is that even though Lindsay is a female name, your resume was so impressive, I thought you were going to be a guy."
That's not helping, dude. You're not,
you know,
digging the hole.
My response, like, I didn't write back to him, but I said, I'm like, "I'm glad we're on the same page about what you meant." And I think, you know, that the thing is that really, and I still experience it today, that a lot of people just don't expect a woman to have this type of experience. Certainly not a woman that's empathetic, can talk and be personable and sociable. Mm-hmm. They just don't expect it. It breaks all cognitive mental models.
Yeah, our preconceived ideas, which this is a vein that ran through an article that I was reading, and I have to admit that I didn't read it until just recently, but the title of this memo that came out was an anonymous article that was written by a Google employee who wrote it in response to the federal government investigating Google specifically for this gender gap in pay that exists. And the title is "Google's Ideological Echo Chamber." And everything that they wrote was pretty much in step with what you were the story and the experience that you were just sharing. And essentially, it says that the gender gap exists not because of discrimination or because males are given preference. The gender gap may in fact exist because women are predisposed to certain traits such as neuroticism, higher anxiety, and lower stress tolerance. So,
I have worked with so many men that have exhibited that, you know, that have spent an hour in a meeting going nowhere because they're just complaining about such and such and such and such in the work environment. So I don't agree with that at all. I don't think that those traits are specific to women in any way. But first, I wasn't surprised that this came out of Google, and we can talk more about that later. But two, it's definitely it's not about kind of innate characteristics. There's mm-hmm. definitely a rhyme or reason why women don't go into the sciences. I read a statistic once that, you know, 9 out of 10 female engineers have a dad or a brother that were an engineer. And that was certainly true for me. So there's definitely reasons why women do or do not go into STEM. But I think for some of the traits that he picked out, he talked about women being more empathetic and sensitive and people-minded. And I actually think that these are core reasons that make me a better engineer, because being an engineer is solving a problem using the time, resources, skills, and money you have at hand. And if you want to solve complex problems, you really have to involve human subjective decision-making into the mix, meaning you must understand people and have empathy. So to go from a good engineer to a great engineer is to really understand people. That makes me great. And apparently that also makes me female, because that's what he attributed to just women.
Right.
So I actually see the problem in having all male engineers is that we're at this point where technology is using us instead of us using technology, because they have failed to consider the human component of their design.
And I'm so glad that you just said all of that, because that was going to be my next question. It's like, okay, so let's stand back and take a larger, broader perspective. Why is it, and I've asked this of many of our guests previously, why is it so important that women be at the table, not just tech, but in all areas of business?
Mm-hmm.
So we lack something. We lack some important elements that women bring, essentially.
Of course. You know, whether it's like social preferences, propensities to do things. I'll give an example. One of my clients is building a database to rate and review doctors specifically for the LGBTQ community. About 30% of people in this community push off going to a primary care doctor for fear of discrimination. And we're not talking about the 1980s AIDS crisis. We are talking about a regular like flu shot or I have a rash on my hand type mm-hmm. issue. They put those off mm-hmm. for fear of discrimination. Now, I don't ever recommend starting a business and saying this product is for an entire community. Right? Because you really need to find a small niche. And when she dug deeper and did the research, she found that the women, the lesbians, were more likely to rate and review doctors and share recommendations because women go to the doctor more, right? And they go to the doctor more often, whereas men tend to avoid the doctor and not want to go, you know, get their ears checked out or whatever other issue that they don't want to the face.
It has to hurt first.
Yeah, or it has to, you know, right. So here is like a legitimate problem that affects everyone in society. And men might want to take advantage of it once a year and find the tool extremely useful once or twice a year. But the reality is to get that tool, much needed tool off the ground, the focus needs to be on the women because they're just more likely to participate early on because they're doing that type of action anyway. So on both sides of that decision, on the side of myself and my client Kat, both women, both diving deep into the problem and building empathy for the customer, we were able to identify that opportunity. And on the side of like the customer and the community we're designing for, the women are going to be the spearheading this issue, this solution, in order to bring it to life.
So essentially using all of your skills and intuition as a woman to help a startup figure out who her primary customer base was.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I work with men too, but what I'm seeing out of Silicon Valley right now, where men are dominating, particularly as engineers and software developers, I'm seeing a lot of quote-unquote technology change, but all economic indicators in our country show that productivity is down.
Well,
and that means there's a conflict and there's a missing piece between what product people need and what technologists are offering right now.
Well, and you mentioned this before, and we may have to have you come back so we can talk about this because I'm really, really intrigued by this gap that you're referring to, basically what we need versus what's being produced. And Lindsay, tell everyone how they may contact you.
Oh, of course. So you can find me most places as Lindsay T. So Lindsay spelled with an A, L-I-N-D-S-A-Y, T like in Tom. So lindsayt.com. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram as Lindsay T. I've been on Twitter since April of 2007. So I secured Lindsay T as a username back then. So Lindsay T. And if you also write the Lady Engineer straight into your favorite search engine, you will find me as well. I have that term, the trademark paperwork submitted on that.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us. And I hope you can come back because I feel like we have a lot more to talk about. This is Heartstock.
Oh, I would love to.
Thank you. This is Heartstock and I'm Carol Murphy. Thank you so much for listening.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5 Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at ButteAmericaRadio.org. That sign was made for you and me. In the shadow of the steeple, I saw my people. A pile of early forfeits. I see my people as they stood there hungry.